You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Clean Comedy Podcast. It's James. And as you know, Luke is gone. He has a baby. I mean, his wife had a baby. He didn't have a baby. But he's out on paternity leave. I think that's what it's called. If a dad has it, I don't know. Anyways, so I was like, well, let's bring somebody that I've kind of been stalking a little bit on the internet and watching their stuff. And I reached out. I think I reached out to him like a year ago or 6 months ago and then dropped the ball. It was on. Was it how long ago?
I might have been. I don't know.
Yeah, I dropped the ball. So it wasn't on him, but I dropped the ball. And then finally I got back in contact with him, and now he's here. So please welcome the very funny, the very talented Garen Chu. Garen?
When you said your co-host was gone, I was like, wait, am I into the new co-host of the show?
No, no, my co-host and his wife had a baby. So there. Okay. So he's on. I think it's called paternity leave if the dad goes, right? Leave. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So – I've been kind of watching your stuff online. I've watched a bunch of your jokes. You've given commentary and advice to comedians. So for me, that was a pretty big deal. I was like, man, this is the type of comedian that I want to be and that I always strive other comedians to be, is being kind and helpful. Now, granted, on the internet, there's always comedians that say stupid stuff, so they kind of need to be put in check, yeah. Which you do sometimes as well. But most of the time, you're very, like, kind and courteous and give helpful advice and only put us in check when we say something stupid and ignorant that makes other comedians look bad, I think, right?
I mean, like, Matt, so the other...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry, my dog's going nuts. The other mod on Reddit stand-up, he's been doing comedy for over 20 years in L.A. And he said,
yeah.
The issue with the internet is on the internet, it's not like an open mic where you're like, oh, that guy's a pro or that guy's been doing it a long time. On the internet, everyone feels like they're even, like
right.
They're equal. So you have people who have never touched an open mic before being like, ah, this is how things should be done. I'm like, okay. I guess.
Yeah. And that's the thing is there's a lot of keyboard warrior comedians too that like, I know better and I should have a Comedy Central thing and a Netflix thing. And you're like, all right, guys, slow down there. You've done one open mic, relax, you know?
And I hate to say this because it happens on open mics too, but like obviously way more on the internet. But you're looking at all these comments being like, 90% of you guys won't be doing comedy in like 10 months, you know. So that's the reality of it.
Yeah, no, and that's the truth for everywhere, right? Like you watch comedians go up at open mics, and you go, he's good, but I can already see this person, or she's good. I can see this person already cracking because they're not getting the reaction they're hoping for. So yeah 6 to 10 months, 6 to 12 months, they won't be around anymore. It's the people that do it and go, man, that was tough, but that was fun. I'm going to do it again. And, like, once you do it a couple times, you're like, all right, it's okay. I still get nervous, though. Like, I still get nervous before I ever do a show.
We look for – I mean, you know, I help run a lot of the scene in Hong Kong, and we kind of look for people who have the bug. We're like, oh, this person, like, he or she bombed really bad, and they were really excited to go back the next night, and they're, you know, they added a tag there. They're starting to figure out joke writing. They're – asking the right questions, they're proactive, they're, you know, going up to veterans being like, hey, can you watch my 5-minute set? Like, just things like that, that kind of initiative is like, oh, this person might want to be doing this for a while. So that's kind of what you look for. At the same time, it's like, you know how you get those Facebook memories things like, oh, this happened a year ago, 2 years ago. I've been starting to get ones from like 7, 8, 9 years ago, and you see a photo of an open mic lineup and you're like, oh, wow, of these 15 people, 5 are still doing comedy right now. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good ratio. Yeah.
That's funny. So how did you get started in stand-up? Because you're in Hong Kong now. Did you start in Hong Kong? Did you start somewhere else? Like, what's your origin story there?
I started in Hong Kong. So I moved to LA in like 2011, and I was staying with a buddy who was a writer or a production guy at Tosh.0.
Oh, nice.
And he did sketch, he did improv, and I was working for the LA Clippers at the time, and he would ask for some writing help. I would do a lot of comedy writing with him. I was a big comedy fan, and I was a debater in college. And he's like, oh, you do a lot of public speaking, you write jokes, why don't you try some stand-up? And I was like, I didn't know you could try stand-up. Like, I didn't know what an open mic was. I just like, I thought some people were comics and some people weren't. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I didn't know you could do that. And then the NBA strike happens. I'm like, oh, great. And I'm out of a job. I was like, okay, I'll move back to Hong Kong for a bit. And like 6 months in, I just walked past a bar and was like, oh, open mic's downstairs. Like, I didn't even know there was a comedy scene in Hong Kong. So I watched an open mic and then I was like, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, you watch an open mic, it's like, oh, I can do this. And came back next week. Did well my first time, bombed really bad for the next like week and a half, 2 weeks after that. But I was kind of like addicted like that. And which, by the way, is like, I think that's the best advice for people who are like, oh, I'm too afraid to try comedy. I'm like, go watch an open mic first. Just go sit down and watch an entire open mic and you realize like, this first time's overrated, you know, just get it over with. But yeah, that's kind of how I started. And I honestly haven't stopped. I think in, aside 2012. So when I started, so over 9 years now, almost coming to 10. I would say the longest I've gone without doing comedy in that time span was maybe like a month and a half. Like that's probably the longest I've gone without.
Even during the COVID thing, like you still were able to do stand up then?
Oh man, so Hong Kong COVID wasn't that bad. Like we've got zero cases. We've basically all of Hong Kong's been pretty much opened up since March of this year. Wow. Everybody has to wear masks and stuff. And some places able to show vaccines, but we've pretty much been open. And even when we were closed, what we do was we wouldn't do Zoom mics because I didn't think that worked here. But what we would do is we'd live stream shows. It's like, you know what? Found a bar. We'd all sneak in there, invite like 6 or 7 audience members and just like live stream it out. And so, yeah, we haven't stopped.
That's awesome.
I guess during COVID it might have been a period of like 2 months where we couldn't do anything, but yeah, during COVID we definitely kept ourselves busy here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's still difficult here in LA because we have a lot of like people who were on TV shows and now their shows aren't recording now or whatever stuff's happening. Yeah. So you have a lot of big name comedians that are taking stage time. So middle acts or openers or new people, it's harder for them to get on shows right now. It's such a weird, awkward time where I'm like, I'm seeing lineups that are like every person you've ever seen in the TV show ever. And like, you're like, wait, there's no like people I don't know on this show. It's crazy.
We kind of made that a mission of like, when we were the, you know, Hong Kong was one of the first places to open up. Even last year, during the height of COVID, we opened up back up in June. We had to close a bit for November to January. But we're like, hey, we're the only people doing comedy right now and in the world. So we're like, we have a leg up, like, to use this time to get better. And it was also a weird thing of, like, we had this big outbreak that came from a live music show. So for some reason, the government decided to ban live music, but not other forms of live entertainment. So like stand up for like half a year, stand up was the only thing you could go out to watch. Like no one could go to a movie theater. No one could go to a club or listen to a DJ, listen to a band. So like, hey, stand up's available. And we had this really nice club that unfortunately shut down that was like funded by Live Nation. Obviously Live Nation's not doing that well globally. So that they, you know, you can't be like, we have to shut down these stadiums, but let's keep this 150-seater bar open in Hong Kong. But we're like, we could only do half capacity, but we were sold out almost every night.
That's awesome.
75 seats is pretty good, yeah.
That is great. And what is the comedy scene like there? How many clubs are in Hong Kong? I've been to Hong Kong once. I was there one time when I was in the Navy. And then we also got to meet Jackie Chan, which was awesome.
Cool.
He was like filming a movie there. And then he also oddly handed out packages of t-shirts and underwear to everyone on our ship. It was like the weirdest thing in the world.
When was this, by the way?
I want to say it was like 2002, I think, somewhere around there.
Was Shore Leave Guard a thing in 2002?
Shore Leave Guard, like being like having people on shore leave.
So no. So obviously the Navy stops by twice a year in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
For some reason, they really like going to the open mics. So every time it's like our version of Fleet Week, we're like, great, our open mics are filled with Navy guys, actual audience. And I don't know when this started happening. It probably like early 2010s. There would be Navy guys, usually older. They'd stand on the corners of streets, usually where all the bars are populated, wearing t-shirts that say the letters SLG. And they told us it stood for Shore Leave Guard and to make sure none of the Navy guys were going out and misbehaving.
Now, that could be based on, it could be the admiral of the fleet is saying that they need to do that. The captain of the ship is saying that, something like that. It could be maybe they had another incident at a previous thing. Like if they came from, like when we went to Australia, we went to three places in Australia, and in two different places, like our people got wild, like seriously so wild. And I was like, this is insane. Like, here I am, like 19. I'm like, relax, guys. You don't get, and it's like 30-year-old dudes like causing all the problems. So
yeah, Hong Kong, the scene. There are probably like two proper clubs, but a lot of bar shows. We probably have so we have like three weekly open mics, and any given week we probably have like three or four proper shows.
Nice.
Anywhere between, you know, you'd have a small bar show, 20 seater, and then the two. Proper clubs, they run at about 100 to 150 capacity. Although right now we're doing half cap, so or 75% cap, so 90 is a sellout. And a lot of shows have been selling out recently, so that's been pretty good. And pre-pandemic, we were like the hub for touring comics, all the way down to like the regular LA road guys who like people probably haven't heard of, but they've been doing it 30 years and they kill at clubs. To, you know, the Chappelle's, the Gaffigan's and all that. And we had a run, especially when Live Nation was like really setting up here. We just had every month a huge comic, and a lot of the time they get us to open. So we're like, oh my God, that's incredible. Especially like if you're working the clubs, it's always usually local openers, but we had a run of just pro comics coming in every month. And that's actually what helped the scene a lot, because especially the road guys who, you know, might have been like, you know, a Tom Rhodes, for example. Like Tom Rhodes has been doing 30 years. He's probably a lot of younger people don't know who he is now, but he would stop by Hong Kong maybe once a year, once every 2 years. So those kind of road guys would come over, comics would get to open for them. And it's always like the, you know, the club booker's like, ah, he's been doing pretty well. You've got a tight eight now, you get to open. And I think that's a kind of difference, not just Hong Kong, but the Asia scene in general, that you get that has a slight advantage over, like, say, the US or the UK, where you get these kind of bigger opportunities a little sooner than you otherwise would.
Yeah.
Just because, like, we have way less comics here. You
know? Right. And so how does it translate? So if an American comedian comes to Hong Kong, is there any kind of, like, lost in translation type situation where, like, my jokes won't hit because American culture is a little bit different or anything like that?
So usually our audiences are anywhere between a quarter to three quarters local Chinese. A lot of it is expats. In fact, we would often do shows where it's just mostly expats.
Okay.
The only things that really get lost in translation would be like, bits are fine. It's sometimes like references you use as like punchlines, or there's a guy, a comic based in Shanghai. He just moved back to the States. He's an American guy. He would constantly talk about Jewish stereotypes, him being Jewish and based in Shanghai. A lot of those bits never land, and I'm like, these bits are funny. Nobody here has ever met a Jew before.
Right, yeah.
They don't not know what you're talking about. So yeah, there's like a few references that kind of miss.
I want to meet first Chinese Jewish person. I want to meet that person.
And usually it's kind of universal, because you one, it's just so diverse. Right. But two, at least when you get to a certain level in Hong Kong, because we're kind of like smack down in the middle of Asia, and all the bigger Asian scenes know each other, like Malaysia, Singapore, Japan, most of China, Philippines. So we travel around a lot. And when you're traveling, you kind of have to, like, I need to do things that work everywhere.
Right.
That's
cool. And so you've been able to travel around Asia and do stand up work, and you've also come to the States. Have you done anything in Europe and stuff as well?
Yeah. I mean, man, so this is the most I haven't traveled. I had like a 4-year run of at least performing in 10 different cities every year.
That's
and
awesome.
Actually right before the pandemic hit, I was in Europe for a bit. I headlined a club in Madrid. I was in Budapest, and then I was in the UK. So I'm finally at like a level where, I mean, similar. So an example, 3 years ago, I was able to do Stand Up New York. I passed there. I was doing The Stand, New York Comedy Club. And I'm not, you know, at like pro headline level, but like, oh, I'm good enough to like, they'll let me do 12, 15 at these bigger clubs. Whereas it used to be when I went to New York, because my brother and sister are there, so I try to visit every year. I would have to do like either the mid to lower level clubs, or like I'm at a bringer show, but I don't have to bring anyone. You know, that kind of
been there.
Like, you know, those places where the floors are always sticky. Like, there's no, like those kind of clubs, like nobody ever cleans the floors. And so the same in the UK, I was always like doing these like small weird rooms. And then right before the pandemic hit, so it's 2019 March, I went, and because of people I open for or contacts I have, I was able to open at the big clubs. So one of them, there's a place called Backyard Comedy. And I just remember being there two nights. I was doing 15 minutes each. First night was 100, second night was 200.
Wow.
And I was like, hey, you guys shouldn't be here. There's a pandemic going on. Like, they literally went into lockdown. I think it was like 10 days later.
Oh,
like,
gosh.
Everybody was joking. They're out. They're like, there's a rumor there's a lockdown on Monday. So everybody come out. And I think that's like the slight difference between the East and the West. Because I remember in Hong Kong, when there was a rumor of like lockdown happening on Monday, people were like, you know what? I'm going to stay home a few days before that, just in case. Whereas in the UK, they're like, lockdown tomorrow, everybody get out of here. Let's all go to the bars.
Let's all party.
Yeah. Europe's a little more nascent in the smaller scenes, because Europe, it's, you know, there's so many different languages. It's not everybody speaks English. Europe is really like UK, a little bit of Amsterdam, some places in Spain, some places in Germany, but it's all like small scenes. Like most of the cities I go to in Europe, the scene's like smaller than the scenes in Hong Kong.
Wow.
But I will say London's probably the third biggest scene in the world behind, you know, it's like New York, LA, and then either Toronto or London. London has, it doesn't have the best scene in the world, but it has the best crowds in the world.
I've heard that before, actually.
Well, it's because like there's such a comedy going tradition in, yeah, you know, or a performing arts going tradition in the UK spanning like, you know, centuries. If you go to New York, any club, you will have New Yorkers, but it's a lot of like tourists. We're trying to get tourists in the door. The shows I was doing with like 200 people, this is like a Thursday night. And it's just like very common practice of, hey, we're done with work. Let's grab a bite and then go to the comedy club and have a few drinks. So it's just like, it's a regular thing people do all the time. It helps that they have a very good platform for comedians to be on television, because they're on panel shows all the time, which is, you know, it's like if the Daily Show featured three regular comics every week, you know. And because they have that, people get TV credits pretty early, and so, you know, everyone when I was at the Backyard Comedy, everyone on that lineup besides one had been on television, so I was, wow, like, oh, this is pretty cool. And yeah, the audience was like, I don't remember going to places where there's, you know, over 100 people at a regular club show on a weeknight for no special occasion. There's like no big headliner coming out. So I was like, yeah, that's pretty impressive.
That's awesome, man. I hope my wife doesn't hear this, because then she's like, we should move to, she loves London. Like, she loves like British stuff, British TV, all that stuff. She's like, we should move there. I bet you can get a TV credit real fast. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to move there. Not that I love LA like so much. It's like, oh, I don't want to leave LA. It's just like, I don't want to. No offense to the British people. British food's not good to me. Sorry.
I mean, I'll probably, you know, if I get a chance to go back to LA, I'm sure I can do some more interesting shows. But when I was going to LA often, it was like way early in my comedy career. That was one, I don't like driving, so it's tough to do like the open mic circuit when you're driving. I remember I was doing an open mic at Silver Lake, and it was like, LA does have some of the saddest open mics.
Yeah.
I don't want to say like a high level of delusion, but like a lack of self-awareness. A lot of people are also not doing comedy to do comedy. They're like, well, I'm an actor and I want to try this. Or I remember like there was a woman on stage, and it was really, you know, hacky, depressing comedy. It's like, oh, I just got a divorce. Ha ha, my husband got the kids, that kind of stuff. And she wasn't doing well, and someone heckled, and she's like, I don't need this. I've been on CSI for 3 episodes this year. I'm like, okay.
I was dead body one, dead body two, and dead body three.
And also, just like a lot of what I've never seen before, I've seen this in Texas once, San Francisco once, and like multiple times in LA. Just like homeless people showing up to open mics.
Yes, yes, like that's very common.
Getting on stage, like weird that this is okay. I mean, at that Silver Lake open mic specifically, they were just like,
the one in the juice bar? There's like one in the juice bar there.
I think it's called the Silver Lake Lounge. I don't know if it's still open, but they were like, yeah, it's because, you know, performers, all people who perform here get a special drink deal. It's only like $2 drinks. I'm like, oh, that's why the homeless people are here. Like, there was a guy who showed up. He wasn't wearing a shirt, and he was clearly just wearing clothes he found in the dumpster. It was like torn up jeans and like an Angry Birds hat. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, LA has the weirdest people that do stand up. Yeah, and it's like actors or just randos off the street that just come in like and use it as therapy sometimes. You're like, what is happening right now? You're like
a lot of people want a platform. Like I saw a guy who was like, he wasn't even a comedian. He was like, I'm a freestyle rapper, but like I'm a freestyle rapper about something funny. I'm like, wow, you just wanted someone to listen to, huh? Okay.
Yeah. I've seen some of those, and actually I've seen some pretty funny freestyle rappers that have done that, and you're like,
oh, I'm sure some of them were
some are good, but yeah, I get what you're saying. So if someone's starting out, like if you like, because you said you take kind of new comedians under your wing and stuff in Hong Kong, if someone's starting out, what's like the biggest piece of advice you offer them when they are starting?
Have fun. I mean, like I just, because there are people who are good at comedy who are miserable doing comedy. They eventually go nowhere. And this is something like Matt Walker always says that I don't necessarily agree with. He's like, dude, I wish I could quit comedy. I would never tell anyone to do comedy. Comedy is an awful thing to have to be stuck doing. And the only reason you do it is because there's something wrong in your brain that says you love it. Now, I wouldn't go that far, but I do say like, you have to love, like go new comic. I'm like, go up on stage, get off stage. Like, did it make you want to do that again? Good or bad situation. So like, just like try to have fun. And the moment you are really not having fun, stop. If it makes you feel better stopping, then that's fine. Actual proactive advice for comics though is, you know, obviously there's the get as much stage time as you can, but also watch comedy. I'm not talking like specials, just like go watch the shows around your scene. It's surprising to me like how many open micers, especially they'll be like, well, I'm not getting booked on that show, so why would I go watch it? Or why would I go to the show? And I'm like, I don't think you, it kind of like makes you understand the level you have to be at to get at these shows. Cause you know, obviously there are a lot of scenes where like, oh, they only got on cause they have connections and blah, blah, blah. In most cases, like these people are killing. People don't, or doing well. Like, you know, comedy is a business. You don't wanna sell tickets and then you have a bad show and then people don't come back again. So like, I tell comics like just watch shows and ask questions. You know, a lot of people are afraid to like talk to the older comics. We're mostly a friendly bunch, so it's okay.
Mostly. Yeah, and it's true. Right. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Comedy Store, but the Comedy Store, they have all the hallways and stuff, and you could run into, you know, headlining comedians that you've seen everywhere and stuff. And I've met like Tom Papa that way. He gave me advice one time and like, just like all kinds of comedians are around. If you just ask or talk to them or engage them, they're going to be cool. You know?
And sometimes I just like, you know, I've opened for a lot of guys. I've traveled a lot. I just try to like pass down some of that advice. Although the best thing I ever heard, I mean, the nicest thing, just cause he's extremely nice. I got to open for Gaffigan when he toured Asia. And that was like, That was like the most comedy muscle memory I've ever had to use, because obviously I had to, I'm not a dirty comic, but I curse a bit, so I have to like really clean up my act, because you have to be clean to open for Gaffigan. And Gaffigan likes his stage lights bright. He likes really bright spotlights. And I was warned about that. So I go on stage, the first show, it's like 1,200 people, it's a big theater, and the lights go on and you can't see anything. It's just bright white. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, so I really just have to tell jokes and based on listening to the laugh reaction, like time my pacing on it. So that was a good experience. And then we were hanging out afterwards and I just told him like, you know, as much fun as that was, like, I can't believe I got to open for you. That was pretty cool. And he's like, well, like you're here because you probably worked hard enough to get here. Like most opportunities, a lot of people say it's like luck and those are one-off opportunities. But when you get enough, it's because you worked hard enough to get there. And you at least had something. Like, it's, you know, you don't get that gig if you're terribly unfunny. And if you were, you're not getting another gig again. So like, that's kind of what I tell people. It's like, also, you just got to work hard at it. Like,
yeah,
when people say the grind, it's not just doing comedy, but it's like, actually pay attention to like what you're writing. Think about jokes. Think about how you can improve bits. Think about tags. Think about timing. So it's just like, it's just more, don't just go to open mics and do your stuff and then get off stage. Like, really try to think about what you're doing. Really try to kind of, I guess, analyze what you're doing. I know people use the term craft, and some people don't like the term craft, but like, that's what it is. Like, figure out the craft. Figure out what are the small tweaks, whether it's like writing or performing, that will just like really push your comedy to like kind of the next level.
Well, yeah, because it's part art, part craft. Like, the art of it, yeah, is your vision of it, your version of the whatever the topic is, and the craft is how to structure and build a joke, build a set, build bits, build all that stuff. Yeah. Those two, you have to have both pieces. It's like, you know, and it's like architecture, right? An architect designs the building, but he has to have the blueprints to know, and certain things can't be changed, right? You have to have, you know, spacing of stuff this far apart, and you know, yep, concrete has to be this, like all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's an art and a craft. I always tell people, like, there's two parts of this. It's art and science, right? You know, basically there is a science to comedy if we do it. And then the other thing is that you just mentioned is no one's really overnight success. I think the saying is like, overnight success is 10 years in the making or something like that. Isn't that like that? Yeah, yeah. Phrase? Yeah. So it's like,
even like, you know, I remember when, like Taylor Tomlinson, she had her special and everyone's like, oh, she's like, she got her special because she's really young, like, oh, and blonde. Like, that's what I'm like, you know, Taylor Tomlinson's been doing it like a decade.
She started with like 16 or something. Yeah.
And also, you watched the special, right? It was hilarious. It was really good.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, you know, I get it. Some people get jaded because like you see something on TV, it's like, oh, that wasn't that good. But like, I always tell people, you know, comedy is it's meant to be a performance art. It's meant to be experienced live. Like, go, even someone you see on a Netflix, you know, when Netflix does like the 20-minute sets, like Gina Yashere, someone's like, oh, that TV set wasn't that good. I'm like, go watch her at a club. She destroys.
Yeah.
She's like, she's a regular host at the Cellar for a reason. Like, you don't get that gig without like killing. And she crushes anywhere she goes. So, you know, it's one of those, like, I tell people, just watch them at the club before you can really judge a comedy.
Yeah, live comedy is a thousand times better than Netflix, yeah, or whatever.
And I mean, yeah, that's like a lot of the, there are so many road guys, you know, a lot of them LA or San Francisco based. Like, we always talk about Paulo Gatta. I don't know if you know who Paulo Gatta is. Hmm. He won the San Francisco comedy competition like maybe 15 years ago. He's been doing it 3 decades. Wow. Based in San Francisco, based in LA, he pops up at all the clubs a lot. He's not a household name. He destroys everywhere he goes. He's like a Hawaiian Japanese comic, and he's just like a pro. And some people are like, yeah, maybe on TV it doesn't come off as well because he just like feeds off the room energy, but like in any club he kills it. And the other thing I also tell people is, don't just focus on the writing. Like, it's the craft and the art, but the craft part, it's writing and performing, right? Yep. So like, there's a lot of, you know, performance techniques you can, I mean, when I watch it, like comics now, like Netflix comics, I'm actually watching how they perform. Like, oh, that's like a minor tweak they did, or a facial expression, or how they pace around the room. And those are kind of things that I pick up more on than writing, actually.
Do you think Gaffigan makes the stage so bright that he can't see it, so he has to listen for the laugh, so it slows him down? Do you think that's part of like his psychological thing? Like, you made me think of that right now. Like,
yeah, I was almost thinking, like, does he have the lights so bright to make himself look pastier than he is?
Dude, that's about that could work. I was just thinking, like, when you said you had to slow down and actually listen to the room for laughs, like, his style is very kind of slow.
Oh yeah.
Anyway,
so
maybe that's part of what keeps him doing that. So it's like, hey, if it's super bright, I'm not looking at anybody, so I can't read their reactions. So I have to wait for the laughter to be able to go to the next piece of that.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, he's one-liner jokiness, so that's like all timing, right?
Yeah.
So, but he's a maestro. I remember I had a green room. I never had a green room before. I mean, like at the Comedy Central thing, we all shared a thing, but opening for Gaffigan, I had a private green room. I was like, oh, wow. And then Gaffigan asked me and another opener to go over. And he was just asking questions. Like, he was very, very curious. Like, hey, in Hong Kong, when you go to restaurants, you know, you've got that roll of toilet paper in the middle of the table. I saw it in Beijing as well. We started explaining to him, and he asked all these questions. And then he went up, he did his opener. And then after his opener, he turned parts of our conversation into bits, like proper one. And we're like,
whoa.
Like he had maybe 40 minutes between him saying that joke and me having that conversation with him. Dang. So that's incredible. Yeah.
That just shows he's got the craft portion down. He just has to turn it into his version of it.
I'm almost thinking like that's probably something he does every time he tours internationally. Like, you know what? I've got my opener, and then I'm going to find something I find curious about the city or something that happened to me while I was like doing something touristy, turn that into a bit, which is incredible.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is comedians have to live life. They have to go outside of their house and stop playing video games to get some bits, right? Yeah. If you don't go out and live life, you can't make jokes about Minecraft or whatever you're doing all day instead of going outside and, you know, going to a baseball game or whatever, hanging out at a bar or whatever you're going to do, hanging out with other people. You're never going to get that experience.
Yeah. There are weird things like, so there are weird quirks to Hong Kong that just every comic jokes about, like who comes over. And the comics will groan a little, only because we've seen it so many times, even though when the comics are coming over, they think that the first, like we have this weird thing where there's a hill with a lot of bars and an escalator running throughout the hill. So you can take escalators to bars.
Okay.
And every road comic comes over and is like, you guys have escalators to bars. And then one day Bill Burr dropped by and awesome show, it's 400 in the middle of the set. It's like, by the way, you guys have escalators going to bars. We're like, oh yeah, everybody's gonna do that bit.
That's funny. So, yeah. I don't remember seeing that, but I remember going to see, I want to say it was one of the Matrix or no, it was whatever that movie was with Antonio Banderas, like Edgar versus Severs or whatever it was. I saw that in a theater in Hong Kong, like when I came, and I also bought bootlegs of like every John Woo movie there was at the time when I was there.
I miss Hong Kong bootleg culture. Hong Kong had the best. There were times when we could buy fake PlayStation games.
Yeah,
you'd pay a guy in a corner and he'd give you a map that would lead you to some like hotel bathroom with a guy hanging out towels, like hand you your games. Like, wow, okay, that was an adventure.
Yeah. Well, there's the first when we went to Hong Kong. I think I was like 18 or 19. We went there and someone told us about a karaoke bar, but it was, we go into this basement area. Well, no, it was crazy. Like we go into this room and it was an unfinished lobby. Like the lobby wasn't finished, but there was gold door elevators, these beautiful elevators. We get in, we go up, we go to like the third floor, we go in, and it was like, I think it was like, not like Yakuza, but whatever like the gang is, like a mafia.
Triad,
like it was one of their like bars, and we had no clue, but they like let us stay and hang out or whatever. Oh. Bought food stuff.
No, they own most of the karaoke bars. They're like, are you guys gonna pay in cash? That helps with their money.
Yeah, and it was super cool. They like hooked us up with like drinks and girls to serve drinks and all. I was like, what is happening right now? This is crazy. But I remember as soon as you walked in, all eyes on us. Like, phew. I was like, oh, this is not good. We shouldn't be here.
I was actually I remember opening for Paul Ogata in Tokyo once, and it was wild because he's a Japanese guy from Hawaii, but it's his first time ever performing in Japan. And show was great, and we're heading to some bars afterwards, and similar thing, like we ended up at a bar that we didn't realize was a Yakuza bar. Everyone's got the dragon tattoos and blah blah blah, and one guy comes over. It's like, oh, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm a comedian. It's like, oh, you're funny? He's like, yeah, I'm funny. He's like, okay, that guy is pointing at this like other Yakuza dude really fat, and it's like, that guy is the funniest guy in the Yakuza. So if you can make us laugh harder than him, it's like, you can stay. And we're like, we're gonna get murdered if we don't kill. And like, he, you know, told some simple, like, you know, a lot of people have that tell me a joke thing, and most comics, we just at least have like a one-liner we can throw at so people can go away. So Paul does this bit that's kind of funny. The Yakuza guys are laughing, and he's like, okay, you go. And the guy they pointed at was a really fat dude. He just took off his shirt and started shaking his belly. We're like, that's better. That's better. He wins. I don't have a joke funnier than that. Sorry.
That's funny.
They let us stay anyway, but I'm pretty sure they set that all up just so they could make that fat guy jiggle his belly. And he had like a dragon tattoo wrapped around it. So I'm like, that's funny.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for sharing your story.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Where can people find you? Where can they find some of your comedy and stuff and that, those kind of things?
You can find me at iamdarren.com or on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. It's all I am Darren. If you ever come to Hong Kong, or if you're somehow in Hong Kong listening to this, I also run a lot of the stuff in the scene, which is on a website called comedy.hk, which basically has, I mean, it's kind of like a calendar for like every show that exists in Hong Kong, even That's the ones awesome. I'm not in or running. I don't post a lot on YouTube, but I might start doing a little more of that now that I've got a little more time.
Yeah.
Which I say all the time, but you know.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you for everybody for listening. Please go check out Garen's stuff. He's very funny. I literally very funny. And if you go to Hong Kong, now you have a place to go and watch comedy. You know that there's going to be good stuff there. Please like and subscribe, follow, and have a good one.